Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Bienvenidos! Hey, my name is Jed Lee. This is Reading with Your Kids. We are beaming out to you and the world from the loveliest neighborhood in all of Boston, Reedville. We are so very happy and absolutely honored that you join us in our mission to help all families grow closer through reading. We do that by sharing fun, thoughtful, and thought-provoking conversations with fascinating people who just happen to be writing books for kids of all ages. You can join us in our mission by telling all of your family and friends about the show and letting them know that they can hear us on the WREB AM FM 24/7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Amazon Music, Audible, CastBox, Player FM, YouTube. Wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. We have a really fun episode for you today. First up, Scott Savage is here to celebrate Quantum Interstellar Sports League Book 2, Soccer Spacetastrophe. This is a really fun conversation about the creative process and also about the how wonderful it is to present to kids. Also, later in the show, Leslie Wahl returns to Reading with Your Kids to celebrate Birdie and the Mommy Mix-Up. Hey, I want to let you know that this episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Chicken Coop Chaos by Nancy Tavares. Are you ready for some barnyard fun your kids will absolutely adore? Then you've got to check out Nancy Tavares' delightful books, Chicken Coop Chaos and Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas. In the original Chicken Coop Chaos, we meet Pearl, a hen who loves peace, order, and a tidy little hen house. But when Wendell the Rooster barges in and decides he's not leaving, Pearl has to hatch a clever plan to take back her space. And let's just say things get hilariously chaotic. And just in time for the holidays, Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas brings even more laughs, heart, and festive feathered fun. These books are perfect for young readers, classrooms, and family read-aloud time. So flap on over to your favorite bookstore or online retailer and grab your copies of Chicken Coop Chaos and Chicken Coop Chaos Christmas today. Your kids will be clucking with joy. This episode is brought to you by onceuponadance.com. Take storytelling to a whole new level. With Once Upon a Dance, your child will do more than just listen. They'll move, imagine, and connect. It's a literary adventure and a performance all in one. From graceful turns to energetic leaps, each story brings an immersive experience that engages both body and mind. Whether your child enjoys unicorns, bats, zombies, or cats, Once Upon a Dance has a Dance It Out story just for them. Celebrate joyful movement and visit onceuponadance.com or find them at your favorite social media platform. Joining us from the beautiful and, dare I say, moon-like state of Utah, our guest is here today to celebrate his middle grade novel. It's called Quantum Interstellar Space Sports League Book 2, Soccer Spacetastrophe. Please welcome to the show, Scott Savage. Scott, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm impressed that you said that without spitting all over. It's a lot of S's there.
There are, and my windscreen here is moist.
Yep, for sure.
So, were you thinking about poor podcasters when you created that title?
If I would have, I probably would have changed the title.
Well, my kids. So I had a very, very bad speech impediment when I was a kid, and it still rears this ugly head, especially when I'm tired and dealing with certain letters. F and S are, especially tricky for me. And my kids, when they were young and very loving and a little bit diabolical, when I would come home, I'd be performing in Philadelphia in the morning, and I'd drive all the way back to Boston, and 7 o'clock at night, my kids are like, awesome, Dad, you're here. Time to read a book. And I'm like, okay, I'm tired. And they would get out Fox and Socks. Knowing.
Oh, that's brutal.
Knowing that I would just be stumbling all over myself.
Yep. No, I get it. I had a speech impediment. I had ADHD, which was not diagnosed at the time. I had glasses and a patch over one eye. So, like, man, I I write about a lot of kids who, like, kind of feel like they don't fit in, you know?
It sounds like you're describing a stuttering hyperactive pirate.
There you go. That's exactly it. Right?
Arg. Arr. So tell us about Quantum Interstellar Sports League. It's funny. I get emails from Ticketmaster, like, you want to go to this thing and that thing? And it said, hey, do you want to go to this arena? And they're having this thing called the Rocket Sports League. And I'm like, what is Rocket Sports League? I had idea. And I went, and I still didn't know any. And then I saw it was eSport.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, they're filling arenas with people watching people play video games.
It really has changed. And it's funny because we talked a lot about that video game when we were doing this book. So the series came together because the artist who I worked with, usually I'll write a book and the publisher will hire the artist. But in this case, the artist, Brandon Dorman, he did, a bunch of the Goosebumps covers. He did Chris Colfer's The Land of Stories. He did Fablehaven. And he's just a great guy, great artist. I've known him for a long time. And he called me one day. My wife and I were having breakfast. And he goes, hey, I've been drawing pictures of aliens playing football. Like, okay, like, where do you go with that, right? And he goes, what would you think about doing kind of a highly illustrated novel about kids playing football against aliens? And right away, it's like all the pieces. I'm like, I want to do that. And so we actually ended up creating the story together. And one of my favorite parts was that in the beginning, he says, well, so I'm thinking the main character should be like the son of the greatest football player of all time. This was book one, which was football, not international football, but American football. Right. And he says, what if the main character was the kid of the greatest football player of all time? And I'm like, okay, I like that. What if he also was terrible at sports and hated football? There's this really long pause, right? You know? And he goes, well, then how would he like get picked for the team? And I'm like, I have no clue. But to me, that's the story. And so when we wrote the story, we wanted it to be like about these kids. There's a girl who's a ballet dancer and a boy who's a soccer player and all these different things. They get brought together having to play football against aliens to save the world. And that ended up just being so fun. And so Penguin said, well, what if we did a second book? And we're like, well, football is really the biggest sport in the U.S. Let's take the biggest sport in the world and do soccer. And so we kind of had to figure out, okay, like, the kids saved the world in book one, might be a spoiler there, but how are they going to have to save the world in book two? And so that's kind of how the series came about.
Wow, that's really, really different. Yeah, we've talked here on the podcast how most publishers have this firewall between illustrators and authors, and it's so neat that this kind of started from a picture. The pictures came first, and then the story came later.
No, it really did. And in fact, it was interesting because Penguin, our editor and our graphic designer, they had to change the process because, again, like you said, normally, so I would write the text, we would make notes, then it would be turned over to the illustrator, and I really wouldn't see it until it came back. But in this case, Brandon and I would bounce stuff off each other all the time. He'd be like, hey, what if one of the aliens was this? Or what if there was like a spy, you know, in the thing? And he would draw these pictures and I'd come back and go, okay, well, let me write that in. And then I would write some stuff and he would take it and put it into a picture. And so it was an interesting process to come up with this story together. But by the time it was done, it was kind of neat because usually you could read a story and see the illustrations, and that's good. If you took the pictures out of this, you literally would lose big sections of the story because it flows really smoothly from text into images. In fact, there are times where I'd be like, okay, this is going to be like this climactic scene toward the end of the game. I'm going to leave like the next six pages blank. I want you to fill it all in with the action of what's happening. And then he would have speech balloons where we would do things and stuff like that. But it really was fun because the story, it's not a text story with pictures. It is a highly illustrated story where the text sort of flows from picture to words to picture to words, you know?
How difficult or fun was that in with you?
Both. It was really fun because when Brandon and I get together, like I'm 62, but I play Minecraft with my grandkids. Like I'm really into, like you mentioned, esports, you know, and just kind of like Rocket League and things like that. And so we'd come back and he'd be like, hey, what if like the fields like tilted or had different gravity? And I'd be like, okay, cool. What if it like changed their voices too? Like, you know, like helium does. And so we played with the ideas. And then our editor would be like, okay, you guys, you have teeth in the exploding alien picture there. We need to take the teeth out. That's like a little bit too much. Or she'd be like, okay, I love your scene where the kid's on the plane and he's stuck between this woman selling candles and this cranky German businessman. But let's shorten that a little bit. But we really kind of let it go wild. So that was the fun part. The harder part was sometimes figuring out like, okay, at what point it's really easy to say if there's a ton of action, go art heavy. If we're really getting into the character's head, go a little more text heavy. But sort of figuring out that right balance, it took some work. Like, honestly, there were times where he would add illustrations and I'd be like, oh, wow. Like, I hadn't seen that. I hadn't seen the scene in that way. But now that I have, I got to come back and write some things to make that whole piece work together. So it really was fun, but also challenging.
You know, it's funny. One of the questions I asked the authors of the fantasy books is, you know, do you ever write yourself into a corner where you kind of forgot what the powers were? And now it sounds like your illustrator kind of drew you into some corners.
Yeah, we would literally, I'd do the same thing to him where like I would put something and he'd be like, okay, like how am I going to show that? And then you're exactly right. Then there were times where he would draw a picture and I would go, okay, I really love that. Like, that's really funny. How do I make that fit what we're doing here? But I think, you know, I think writing yourself into a corner is really great sometimes because if you can't see a way out initially, that means your readers won't be able to as well. Mm-hmm. So if you have to think it through and figure it out, hopefully it makes it more exciting for the readers.
Yeah. I'm really curious. You're talking about sending ideas back and forth to each other and to your editor. Did your editor ever get on the phone and go, Scott, can we lay off the mushrooms the next
session? Oh, yeah. That was a discussion we had to have early because it's sort of funny. I've written a lot of middle grade. I've written steampunk. I've written a series that takes place in Alice in Wonderland, and all of them sort of have their own voice. But the voice we were going for here, we sort of described it as Last Kids on Earth meets Space Jam with football. And the way that the kid talks in this is he's like, okay, here I am. I'm getting ready to go out on the field. And, you know, I'm as nervous as the time when I got Lego Batman head stuck in my ear. But that was totally okay because Grandpa got it out with a pair of pliers. And now these aliens are going crazy and they have all these Skreegle stands. And I don't even know what Skreegle is. And like this voice was almost kind of like a manic type voice. And so the only way to write it was to sort of go overboard and then let our editor kind of pull it back in a little bit. If I tried to write just at that level, I would usually end up like not quite doing enough. And so I'd go, I'm going to throw everything out here. You tell me, like, if it makes you laugh out loud, that's probably a good thing to keep in. If it starts to feel a little bit long, then maybe let's shorten that.
So do you recommend this creation process to others?
Well, I think in a way, yes. So one of the things that I talk to a lot of schools, I've done over 4,000 elementary school visits, and it's really interesting because the conversations that you have with kids who talk about, you know, hey, you wrote about dyslexia or ADHD, or you talked about having, you know, and I have that. And as you talk to them, some of them really, they connect better with a full-on graphic novel. Some of them are more text-oriented. I think it depends a lot on kind of how your brain processes things, what you see in your head while you're reading. And by the time we got done with this, I really felt like we had something that could appeal to both groups. It's not all illustrations. It's not like a full-on like comic book, graphic novel type thing. But it's also more than a picture here and there. So what we ended up with, I'd like to do it more. And I think it's great for the illustrator because we actually split royalties 50-50. Usually, like, your illustrator would get a one-time fee and you would get royalties. With Brandon and I, we had in the book, we're like created by both of us. We split the royalties. And it, I wouldn't do it for all of my books, but I think it made something that neither of us could have made by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Are there going to be more books in the series?
I hope so. That's one of the things, again, like you're like, oh, I've got the ideas. I mean, we totally know where they're going to go. It really kind of depends on sales and, you know, how things take off. So I'm not working on a book three right now. We're kind of waiting to hear back. I'm working on a couple of other projects, but we would love to. It was fun to go from football to soccer and we were like, okay, like what if we actually do like an alien sport? Like what if that's, you know, the first one was, okay, well, they beat us in football, but football in the contract wasn't defined as American football. So now we got to play soccer and they, you know, they end up defeating the aliens, but the alien leader is determined to get Earth to turn into a galactic fast food restaurant. So we had a lot of ideas for where we could go with it. So I'm hoping it does.
I love it. The aliens are going to turn the Earth into a rest stop.
They totally are. Yep. They had big plans. Snozzly Grofsplot was the alien leader who was determined. He wanted to turn Earth into a fast food restaurant and claim all the kittens as his own. That was his like big galactic plan.
Now, who came up with that name and that concept?
So it was funny because, again, sort of a combination. So he drew this alien with an upside down nose hair sticking up out of his nose, you know, and this glass dome on his head with his brain floating inside. And then I looked at that and I'm like, okay, like we got to do something with the nose. So I came up with the Snozzly Grofsplot. And then he, at the end of book one, maybe it was earlier, but somewhere he had this thing where the alien's like, and all the kittens will be mine, you know? And it's like, all right. So like he's getting kittens. What's he going to do with Earth? And I think, I can't remember which one of us came up with the fast food, but it really was like we would just have these long conversations where my wife would be in the other room rolling her eyes and we'd be laughing and, you know, It's cool because, like, if you want to make a movie with this kind of stuff, your budget just gets bigger and bigger. When you have the artist and the writer there together creating it, like, anything we think of between the two of us, we can make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What were your early, I could probably guess, but I'm curious, what were your early influences as you were a kid? What were you reading as a kid that helped you develop this sense of humor?
So I'll tell you. Early on, books were sort of like my lifeline. Like I mentioned again, you know, the patch and the speech impediment and ADHD. And I got picked on a lot. We had moved around quite a bit. And libraries were the place where I went kind of as a safe spot. And I remember really connecting with stories where you have like a character who feels like they don't fit in, you know. Early on, things like a Wrinkle in Time, you know, or Charlotte's Web, you know, where you're like, okay, this is sort of an outsider. Later, the book, The Outsiders, you know, was again something that clicked with me. And so when I start almost all my stories, like I said, I've got horror, I've got, you know, Wonderland, I've got a kind of like a young Indiana Jones slash Humphrey Bogart in different series. So I really like different voices and characters, but almost all of them tie into a character who feels like they don't fit in some way and then discovers that those differences are good. And then I think like the humor, it's almost like I don't think I would have a really hard time writing a book that didn't have humor in it, especially for kids, because I don't know, kids are always like, they're always either being amazed by something or laughing at something, you know?
Yeah. That's really cool. You mentioned that you've had, visited 4,000 or so, elementary schools. That's something that I did for, and still do today, not full time anymore, but it's wonderful. And I'm sure that you've been asked questions, and I'm sure that then a couple of questions that kind of made you think, where in the world did that come from? can you think of any of those really kind of fun and different questions that you've been asked over the years?
Well, so we have a lot of fun. When I do my assemblies, we talk about, again, our differences and how our differences make us great. And then we do how to come up with an amazing story idea in less than 5 minutes. And so we have one character who is a one kid who come up, they gave us a main character, you know, and then a kid has a goal, and then we have obstacles along the way. And so it's really fun seeing the way that those stories go, because you'll get something like a chipmunk that farts rainbows who wants to win the Super Bowl, you know, but his mom grounded him because he didn't finish his homework, you know, and you'll be like, wow, okay, let's get into that one. But then you'll get another one where it'll be like there is a girl whose mom died, and she has to live with her dad who's like mean to her, and you start to like see these stories behind the kids' stories. And I think again, that's why like writing stories for kids is so important, because they'll take something like, again, like kids playing football against aliens, and they'll sort of bring their own lives into it. And so I always have to kind of stop for a minute. Like one of the kids, you know, like the teachers are always like, okay, make sure it's a question and but not a statement. And then you'll have a kid who's like, okay, I've got a statement and a question. And then they'll tell you like some really heartfelt story about their lives and go like, do you think you could put that in a book? Or do you, you know, I have ADHD and anxiety and I want to be an author, but I don't think I can, you know, like they'll tell you those kind of things that just sort of stop you for a minute. And I've had times where like, you've got this whole auditorium of kids, you know, like you could have 400 kids in a gym and you've been doing your set thing. And when you get to the questions, there's times where you just like go down and like sit on the floor by the kid and go, hey, let's talk about, you know, how all of our brains are different. Let's talk about like how we see things in different ways. And I really love those sort of moments that I would have loved to have had those moments when I was a kid, finding those books that helped me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What's that like when you meet a little you?
So it's really funny because I pick, like I said, I pick like five kids, a hero, goal, and three obstacles. And I sort of watch to see like sort of who needs to come up. Like you've got the kids who are really popular. All their friends are pointing to them. And sometimes you'll bring like one of those up. But I remember one time I was doing this assembly, and I look in the, it was with bleachers in this case. And there was a kid who was much bigger than all the other kids, and he had teachers all around him, which tells you certain things right away, you know, and he's watching me very intently, but his expression doesn't change at all, but his eyes are there, like they're connected. And I said, hey, so are there any, you know, do any of you want to be an obstacle? Raise your hand. And he raised his hand. And I've been careful. Like there are kids who like, I want to call up, but I also like, they're not quite ready to come up, but he raised his hand. as soon as like I called him up, like all these teachers, they're kind of panicked. They're coming up with him, you know, and I'm like, no, we're good, you know. And so I had him stand there and so I went to each of the kids and I got to him and I said, okay, so, you know, we have an obstacle. Do you want to choose an obstacle? And he said, obstacles stand in our way. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. I said, you know, do you want it to be like a dragon or a mountain of squeezed cheese or, you know, like, what do you want? And he goes, a pickle. So I'm like, all right. So we have this giant pickle and the pickle's doing all this stuff. And they probably like had to play, like a certain music to get past it, or they got like a band of rats to come eat the pickle, like whatever it was. And we got done and the kids laughed. Everyone thought it was fun. And we got done. And I give each of the kids a poster because usually my publisher has posters with me and the kids are always excited. It's a signed poster, but he takes that poster and like, literally it was like, I just handed him like the Holy Grail. He's holding them like so carefully. And all the kids, as he's going back, the teachers are looking at, he's showing to him. And I start to do my presentation a little more and I look over and he's holding this and he's rubbing his hand gently across the poster. And I got to tell you about it, like I just, like totally choked up. And it was really hard to get through the rest of the assembly because you knew that you had an impact there. And I just love when like librarians will come up to me afterwards and go, I don't know how you picked those kids, but like you picked the kids that had to come up, you know, and that's just, I don't know, you know, like as an author, you've got like, you're in your office just typing, like hoping it works. Then your book comes out and you get to like see what readers think and stuff. But there's times where you get to make that sort of heart to heart connection where, you know, like I changed a life here today. And for me, that like, that's more important than anything else, is knowing that you had a real impact on some kid's life there.
Yeah. I had that same question asked to me many, many times. And I just go, you know, if I'm in the Catholic school, I go, God, you know, divine intervention, you know, public school, yeah. I have to be a little bit more like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. And you always get the teachers. Like I had a teacher email me. She goes, so I had these two second grade boys, I guess fourth. No. Yeah, I think it was second grade. Two second grade boys here in my class. I haven't been able to get them to write anything all year. After your assembly, they came up to me and they're like, hey, we want to make a graphic novel about a farting chipmunk. She's like, you know, before I would have like said, oh, that's not appropriate. But like in that one, I think we like one of the kids came up and they're like, okay, the main character is poop. And you're like, okay, we can roll with that, you know? And she goes, after your assembly, I was like, go ahead. And by the end of the day, they had written like 10 pages with illustrations and panels and everything, you know? And it's like, that's, I think again, like we're not teachers. We're not there every day. Right. But if we can get kids to view reading and writing as fun and safe, like it's like, there is no wrong answer and creating stories is a fun thing. Then like that gives the teachers something to work with and go, okay, you wrote that. Let's try writing this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I think you probably agree with me that the time being invited into a school to spend 45 minutes an hour, it's an honor. And it's kind of like a sacred duty that we have to take serious. It's something really special.
You're right. I mean, that is, you take like 300 kids in a gym for roughly an hour. And that's 300 hours of school time that's like being put on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And so I want to keep the kids entertained. And that's, again, I can tell like right away, us talking back and forth, like we know how to entertain. And there were times, like I did a school one time where it was an inner city school and the principal's like, we've had all these problems. Like the kids have broken windows in assemblies. And she's like kind of shouting, okay, you all sit down. You're all going to be quiet. You know, and I'm like, okay, like this is the wrong thing. I'm going to have the kids like doing a wolf howl or whatever. But we got done and she goes, I've never seen the kids like so connected. And I said, that's because it's not the kids. Like I know that the kids might struggle, but it's the person presenting to them. Like It is not the kid's responsibility to sit still and be quiet for an hour. It's our responsibility to come in, entertain them, but hopefully also leave something behind that the teachers can use. In fact, one of my favorite things, you know how like you start an assembly and, you know, the kids are like looking, but the teachers are like on their laptops or their tablets or they're kind of doing their thing. And your goal is how long before I get the teachers to all put down their tablets and like start getting pulled in, you know? And if you do that, then there's a connection between the teachers and the kids that they can take and use afterwards. So,
yeah. One of the pieces of advice I've given, because my shows are a lot of magic and kids are excited, and you know, we'd have somebody up on stage and they would create this magic thing happen, and then they're going back and they're the heroes.
Yeah.
People go, well, how do you get the kids' attention back? And I say, I whisper. Mm-hmm. What do you mean you whisper? I whisper. But the kids, they can't hear. Exactly. So they settle down because they want to hear. They love what they just saw. They want to hear what else I have to say. So I just whisper, and they have to be quiet. None of this raising my hand and clapping and all that other kind of nonsense.
Nope, that's, again, it's you as a presenter. It was harder. We did some stuff during COVID because I had a book that came out. Trying to do that with a mask over, like that's it's an entirely different thing. But you're right. Like we would do a thing where I'm like, okay, so a hero, I go, okay, let's talk about a protagonist. They tell me, you know, what's a protagonist? It's a hero. And I'm like, okay, so it's got to be like a knight in shining armor, right? And they're like, no. And then what I want to do is get it up and up. So I'm like, can it be like a boy? And I have like The Last Airbender, you know, like an animated GIF. Can it be a girl? And it's Moana. Can it be a tree? It's like dancing, you know, Baby Groot. Can it be a rock? And it's Dwayne Johnson, like flexing, you know, and now you've got like the point where they're just going crazy and laughing and screaming. And then the next image is just this GIF of this blowing grass. And you're right. You take your voice and you're like, can the hero of your story be a single piece of grass? And literally, you're exactly right. If you do it right, you bring them right back down to where they're suddenly paying attention. You're like, great. Let's make a hero. But yeah, it really is fun to like to have everybody howling and screaming and having fun and then go back down and go, okay, let's talk about like how this is going to work for you. You know, I love that.
Yeah. My friend, it is such a privilege to be invited into a school. And I love that you, And I agree. It's those kids that are surrounded by the teachers, and the teachers like, oh no, not
yeah, yeah.
It's always the best.
It is. Always it is.
Best. Hey, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Interstellar Sports League Book Two. Quantum Interstellar Sports League Book Two, Soccer Space Catastrophe.
Yep. So it is available in print, ebook, and audiobook. And pretty much you can go to Barnes & Noble. You can go online, pretty much wherever you want. It was really fun seeing them. The audiobook is fun because they would literally have to go, okay, here's how we're going to do these sound effects and stuff to do like the comic book type illustration. And so, but yeah, they're pretty much everywhere. Book one or book two, you can read in either order. They're a lot like, again, like I said, kind of last kids on earth that, you know, like there is an ongoing storyline, but you can read them out of order and still enjoy them.
Awesome. And we love encouraging listeners to go to their public library and request that the books are on the shelf.
Yes.
And I think I want to challenge people. I go to your librarian and say, can you please bring Quantum Interstellar Sports League Book 2, Soccer Space Catastrophe into, and if you spit on them, just, you know, wipe it up. That makes
That's exactly right. They're probably used to it. If it's a children's librarian, especially.
Exactly. We've had a great time speaking to Scott Savage. Scott, you have an open invitation to come back on Reading with Your Kids anytime.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. I really like want to have you come to like a school where I'm at so we can perform together, you know?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Have a great one. Take care.
Get ready, adventure fans. Toby Baxter is back. and I Heart River Home, the fourth thrilling book in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series, written by Tim Wright, 13-year-old Toby dives into his most unexpected quest yet. He's battling trolls, navigating the sandpit of love, and getting stuck with an L-O-V-E compass. But when the girl of his dreams, Rainy, is kidnapped, Toby must summon more courage than ever before. All four books in the Adventures of Toby Baxter series have been honored as Reading With Your Kids certified great reads, each packed with fast-paced action, humor, and heart. So grab your copy of I Heart River Home today and join Toby on an unforgettable journey through River Home, where every page is an adventure. This episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Trumpet, the Miracle Wolf Pup series. There's a brand new book in the series, and we're so excited to tell you all about it. Trumpet becomes a mom. In this exciting book, Trumpet and Lighthawk, now a bonded pair, start their own family with their very first litter of pups. Families can read together, schools can explore the importance of wolf packs and conservation, and Trumpet fans everywhere can celebrate this milestone in her incredible journey. Grab your copy today, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, select bookstores, and the Wolf Conservation Center, where Trumpet and her family live. Plus, 50% of all profits go right back to supporting the Wolf Conservation Center, with more donated to Lighthawk Conservation Flying. So grab your book today and have a group haul for Trumpet and her family. This episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast is brought to you by the books by Robert Provan, Sammy and Scarlett's Mangrove Adventure, and Sammy and Scarlett's Coral Reef Adventure. The first book in the series, Mangrove Adventure, recounts the tale of two young fish who live in a tidal pool in the Florida Keys. Sammy is a sergeant major fish, and Scarlett is a yellow-tailed snapper. They are different species from one another, and they don't look anything alike. But despite this, they become best of friends. They learn that it's not the color of a fish's scales that matters, but rather whether or not they have a loving heart. Sammy and Scarlett's Coral Reef Adventure is the second book in the series and tells the story of Sammy and Scarlett's continuing journey from the shelter of the mangrove forest in search of their adult home on the coral reef. The two fish are befriended along the way by Howie, the hawkbill sea turtle, who helps them through the dangers they will face ahead. Together, the three explore the amazing underwater city that is a coral reef. You and your family are going to love these books. Check them out today. The books by Robert Provan. My friends, we are excited to welcome back one of our favorite guests. She's here to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Birdie and the Mommy Mix-Up. Please welcome back Leslie Wall. Leslie, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing so great. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's always such a fun time to chat with you.
I really enjoy chatting with you. Leslie's been on the show very many times on her own and also with the authors from Catholic Teen Authors. And they've always put together an original story for us for Christmas, and we're looking forward to having that happen again this year. So I can't wait.
We are working hard on it, so we are excited too.
Tell us all about Birdie, and what's this mommy mix-up all about?
Yeah, so this is a sweet little picture book. I'll take a step back. So years and years ago, when my oldest, who's now 30, when he was just a toddler, we were going on a road trip with my parents, and he was getting very fussy. So my mom was making up all these stories to kind of keep him entertained. And this was one of them, about this cute little bird, and the eggs were all mixed up, and, you know, they're hatching and the wrong mommies with the babies. And I just thought it was so cute. And it was kind of stuck in the back of my head for years. And I thought about doing some picture books, but then I got into writing teen novels. And I kept thinking about this story, but I actually didn't remember what the ending was or how it even, you know, much about it. And my mom didn't remember either. And So I never did much with it. I couldn't really quite figure out how it would work and how the ending would go. And then in 2022, my mom passed away. And I thought, well, I really want to try to make this happen again, to kind of do it as a tribute to her. So I tried again, and I was working with a group that were all pitching picture books, and then we'd help each other, you know, figure out what was working and what wasn't working. And they all kind of had the same thought as me, you know, it's a cute story, but there's just something not quite right. We don't have a good ending. And then it just kind of hit me. And my mom was always a big proponent of learning. She just thought education, you know, it was never a waste. She loved to learn and do adventures with my dad, but it was really her love of learning that always stuck with me, because back when she was younger, you know, in her small Pennsylvania community, girls didn't have much education after high school. And she pushed and pushed and pushed her parents to let her go to nurses training. And they finally did. And so to her, that was always a big deal. And so when I made Birdie, my little character, you know, have a love of knowledge and so forth, it made it perfect, because of all her learning and reading books, she's able to match up the birds with their mommies, because she knows about, you know, all the different things that and the different birds and their different characteristics and so forth. So it was kind of a fun project to work on, especially, you know, in honor of her.
Did you feel your mom's presence, maybe whispering to you as you were writing this?
A little, yeah, I think so, because there would be some things that just would like kind of come to me, and I was like, oh, yeah. That's in fact, when I first long ago was thinking of this book, it was going to be Robin the, I think Rhonda the Robin or something, and my mom's name was Roberta, and back east everyone called her Birdie. And so when I changed it to that, you know, and I didn't switch it because she's a little red bird in the story. So back in 2022, my father passed away 6 months before my mom did. So I lost them both that year. And after my dad passed away, I kept seeing hawks, and I kept thinking, oh, I feel like, you know, that's a communication to me of some sort. I don't know how, but that he's doing okay, you know, and he's watching over us. And then when my mom passed away, it was like, well, is there going to be a special bird for her? And a friend that day, when I was thinking that, brought me this little gift, and it had a little red bird on it. And I was like, oh, so, you know, I guess that's the one for my mom. So then I, you know, put that in the story. So just little things like that. And then I do have a hawk in the story, like, cause she thinks, oh, these hawks are so adventurous. So just little bits and pieces that, you know, mean to special things to me and my family, but just our little incidents in the story too.
Yeah. You know, I was just speaking with another author, and she was mentioning how butterflies, when she sees a butterfly, it makes her think of her mom, because her mom loved butterflies. And I think that that's a really, when someone that we love, we say goodbye to them, they can stay with us as long as we keep their memory alive. And having something like a butterfly or a hawk or a red bird, every time we see one of those beautiful wonders of nature kind of come into our lives, it's like, oh yeah, that's my mom looking for us. And I think that's a fun thing to share with kids too, even though there's no scientific way to prove it. The reality is, it's like, hey, every time I see a red bird, I'm thinking my mom, and that's keeping her alive. She's keeping her alive in my heart. So, yeah, it works.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't know for sure, but, you know, yeah, your memory of them, and that's an important part. And then you can, you know, just it brings up, because you get wrapped up in your day-to-day, and then when you see something that brings them back, it's very special.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tell me, what's the biggest challenge going from writing YA novels for older kids to then go down and start writing picture books?
Yeah, there's a couple things that I find challenging. One, it's a much smaller word count, because I can, like, and the novels go on and have these big descriptions or big adventures, and then for the picture books, you know, you have to make that much smaller. And some of the words you would use. Now, I do have a few that I have added, and a couple people were like, oh, that's kind of a big word, maybe you shouldn't have it. But then other people I ran into, my illustrator and another person who writes books, said, oh, I like that, because some of the big words, it's good for kids to hear some big words once in a while, especially if it's in context, they can kind of mm-hmm. learn what that is. So that was kind of nice. I was able to use them because, you know, certain words just kind of come to me. But and then the biggest challenge, you know, it takes a long, it's a long process with the illustrations, and I can't draw worth anything. So I put those into the capable hands of the illustrators, but then it's fun to see the story come alive. And it's such an interesting thing because it's my words, but the pictures really can make it, you know? And so it's a neat collaboration.
Yeah.
It's a fun process.
One of the things that was a really pleasant surprise is that picture books are meant to be read together with a parent. So having those big words in there, that's not a problem, because mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, trusted adult should be there to be able to translate and tell the kid what that big word means.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, and you do such a good job of pointing this out with your podcast. Like, it's a special time for the child and the adult to be together and to learn a little bit and just to have a special time of interacting and chatting. So it brings that up.
A thought just entered into my mind. I'm imagining a family sitting down reading Birdie and the Mommy Mix Up together, and maybe they lost a grandparent 6 months, a year ago, or an aunt or somebody, or maybe the grandparent passed before the kid was even born, like with my daughter. But you could start that tradition of, hey, you know, I think the hawk that we see maybe that's grandma looking out for us. And it's would be a great excuse to just talk, because my daughter never met my grandmother, who would have been her great grandmother. Never met my dad, who is her grandfather, but she can tell you a lot about both of them.
Well, that's neat, because she heard so many stories and stuff. And it doesn't even really have to be, you know, an animal, because even if it's just something that meant something special to, or a place that meant something special to that grandparent or the person they've lost. Mm-hmm. Anytime you think about that or see it, yeah, it can bring back those memories. And that's important to have those, because we don't want those memories and those people to be lost to us, you know, mm-hmm. and the future generations.
Yeah. Was it difficult for you as the author of novels, now when you're collaborating, was it difficult for you to remember as you're writing that you had to let the illustrator also tell part of the story?
Yeah, that is something that I try to let go, because they do like to often, at least the ones I've worked with, kind of like a little bit of idea of what you're thinking, but yet they, if they have a new idea, I'm like, yes, please bring that. So I try to just kind of limit it a little bit. I was thinking this, but if you have something else, and on some parts, just let them kind of go with it. And I find it so fascinating, because it's, you kind of picture it in your mind a certain way, but you kind of got to let that go. And then it usually comes out better, you know, and in a special way. And you're just like, oh, I hadn't thought of it like that. Or seeing that character with that little, you know, interesting aspect to it or something. And so it's fun to see. Yeah, I can see how some people, it might be hard to, because if you have an exact thing that you want, to let it go. But when you have no artistic skills, you have to let it go. Someone else do it.
Tell me, what is it about writing for kids that brings you so much joy?
Gosh, that's a good one. I guess it's just because of my own kids, I mean, I loved reading to them when they were young. And so I was always creative, but especially after they were born, just had more ideas flowing and stories that I wanted to do. So I have some other picture book ideas. But then as they got older and they were teens, then I switched to the teen novels. So now trying to balance it all, all the different stories that are in your head, but finding time to get them all down is a trick. But I just hope the kids enjoy them. The teen novels, they all are like faith-based. So I hope the teens are kind of growing and having good morals and so forth. But the picture books are just more sweet stories that parents and kids can enjoy together.
Yeah. Tommy, you mentioning having all these different ideas. How do you just keep them in your mind, or do you have like stacks of notebooks where you've written down kind of story premises and pitches to yourself?
Yeah, some of both, but mostly at least I jot a few things down. And there were a couple of other picture books I've started over the years, but again, the Holy Spirit, or, you know, it just put me in different directions. It just didn't work out. And so you keep trying, it doesn't work. So you put that on the shelf for a few years and you come back and then you have a new idea that would make it work or something. So it's an interesting process. And yeah, I often sometimes wonder, I'm like, will I ever get to all the books that I have in my mind? Yeah. Or will I just always have all these extra ones and never be able to finish them? Or at some point I'll be like, that's enough. You know, I've had a good run. That's all I have, and, you know, move on to something new in life. So who knows? We'll just see how it goes and how it continues.
Yeah. Do you have a novel that you're working on right now for teens?
Yes, it's actually, I'm in the editing process of the third of in my Blind Side series. So it's that's one about the snowboarder, Olympic snowboarder. And I've had good success with the first two, but they were out quite a few years ago. And it took me a long time just to get the idea for the third and probably final one. So that's been fun to go back to those characters because they kind of are friends over time, you know. And wow. So to enjoy working with them. And that one's set in Colorado, which is always really fun for me since that's where I live.
Yeah. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Birdie and the Mommy Mix-Up and find out more about you.
Yeah, so my website, LeslieWall.com, is the best place to find all my books. But Birdie is up on Amazon and probably, you know, usually other bookstores, if those books find their way to them as well, Barnes & Noble and so forth. So, yeah, Birdie and the Mommy Mix-Up.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Birdie and the Mommy Mix-Up. It's the brand new picture book from our guest, Leslie Wall. Hey, Leslie, thanks for being back on Reading with Your Kids.
Thanks again, Jed. I so enjoy it.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Reading with Your Kids and will join us for the next exciting episode of the show. If this episode made you smile, and I have a feeling Scott Savage and Leslie Wall both had a lot to say that would have made you smile, please consider sharing it with a friend. Send them a link. Maybe share the link on your socials. We'd love it if you could write a 5-star review of the show. And, of course, we really hope that you'll subscribe to the show so you don't miss a moment of Reading with Your Kids. You can connect with us on social media at facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at readingwithyourkids on Instagram, at JedlyMagic on X. Our website is readingwithyourkids.com. If you are the author of a great children's book, you want to go to readingwithyourkids.com and click on the author's click here button up at the top of the page. You can find out how you can be a guest here on the show and tell thousands of Kidlet fans all over the world about your fantastic children's book. Want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful, starting with our guest, Scott Savage. Please be sure to check out Quantum Interstellar Sports League Book 2, Soccer Space Catastrophe. Also want to thank Leslie Wall. Her book is Birdie and the Mommy Mix-Up. I want to thank my team, Chris Doherty, Fatima Khan. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we all want to thank you. You are amazing. You're working hard, you're taking care of your kids, you're taking care of your community, and you always find time to make the world a better, more empathetic, more caring place. And you do that every time you read with your kids. Hey, I'll be looking for you on the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.